The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Netflix apparently wants managers to ask themselves whether or not they'd rehire their current employees, and if the answer when they gaze into their hearts is probably not, well, then it wants them to fire them. I'm joined by Donal O'Donoghue, Managing Director at Sanderson Recruitment and host of the Talent Matters podcast. Donal, how are you?
Good, Anton.
Now, this, of course, can't happen in Ireland because thankfully our laws preclude me from looking at an employee or anybody else and saying, you, get out. So, first of all, why is Netflix doing it and does it work? And secondly, is there any version that we do over here?
Well, I think Netflix has come a long way since they mailed their first DVD in 1998 to having 260 million household subscribers now. So I'm not questioning their corporate strategy, but this is a really concerning one. And this keeper test, as they call it, has gone viral on social media recently. Basically, what happened is the CEO sent out an update to their culture policy. And one of the things, one of their core principles that they talk about is being a dream team. And it basically says that Netflix models themselves on a professional sports team, not a family. Families are about unconditional love. Professional sports teams, on the other hand, focus on performance, having the right player in every position, even when that means swapping out someone they love for a better player. So basically what he's done is he's asked all managers to do a keeper test on their people. Two questions. If you, for example, if an employee, let's call them X, came to you and said they wanted to leave, would you fight to keep them? Would you go to HR? Would you try to find budget? Would you really fight to keep that person? Or, knowing everything that I know today, would I hire X again? And if the answer to that is no, he says that he believes it's fairer and better for everyone to part ways quickly. Now, that to me creates a really unstable, unsettling culture. And the challenge with that in Irish law, as you've quite rightly said, is that we've got protections for employees in place here. But you do see these US companies who have Irish operations that will put out these grandiose statements and then say subject to local labour laws. But it's still, the culture still kind of prevails throughout the organisation.
But that is to suggest that no Irish company ever manages people out. Many do.
Many do. But having said that, you know, you've got to look at things like, if you take this scenario, for example, one of the things that they're asking people to do is when you have your monthly one-on-one with your manager, ask the question, am I a keeper? You know, can you imagine that? Actually going to your boss and saying, am I a keeper? And they'll either say yes or you're not a keeper at the moment, Anton. And then that really eager person can turn around and say, what do I have to do to become a keeper? To me, you know, we're in a culture here particularly in European countries where there's far more protection for employees and the employees are far more likely to ask the manager, well, are you a keeper?
It also flies in the face, I would have thought, of several decades of corporate and employment psychology.
Absolutely. And as you rightly pointed out, you know, you think about it, we're protected under unfair dismissals in Ireland, constructive dismissal. Like if you feel in a situation where on a monthly basis you have to go in and almost justify your existence, there's certainly grounds potentially for bias to creep in there. For one manager's view, you know, should company culture and should your performance management be based just on one manager's biased view potentially? It's really risky. So, the other thing that it brings to mind is when you think about employment law in the States versus in Europe, they've got the concept of employment at will, which means that an employer or an employee can, you know, for any or no reason, terminate the contract at any time. It's very different to how we view the workplace over here. If you think about the employee life cycle, during your time with an organization, you're going to encounter, highs and lows, marriages, bereavements, different challenges, buying houses, selling houses, divorce, all that kind of thing. And I think our view on the employer-employee relationship is that you kind of, you know, we value longevity, we value loyalty and supporting each other through those ups and downs. Whereas this...
Do we not have a broad spectrum? I would have thought, and I mean, obviously some companies, some large Irish companies spring immediately to mind. There are some companies that have a culture of combative competition. And if you don't fit with that culture, I can't imagine you being given much rope.
That's true. And, you know, these organizations would like to say that they're a performance culture and that they value performance, and people that don't fit that culture, you know, will wither on the vine or will move on of their own volition. But I think where it's part of your culture to say, look, we are not a family, we're a competitive sports team and you've got to do what's right and maybe you should just disappear quietly if you're not meeting our expectations. It's
Now, how much of this is rooted in managerial resentment in Netflix? Because particularly around the recent Dave Chappelle specials, there were Netflix staff protests about the fact that he was given a platform on the platform. And one of the things that the CEO has also said in this update is, if you don't, I'm paraphrasing, but more or less, if you don't like the full gamut of what it is that we produce, maybe you should work in somewhere else.
That's completely, it's the same ethos that we've seen with, if you look at Amazon, I think they're the fourth or fifth largest employer in the world. And they've basically mandated everybody to return to the office from the 1st of January 2025. And this goes back to those big grandiose statements where they're probably looking for people that maybe don't fit or no longer fit around there, and want them to go quietly rather than go through a process. Again, it's not the way we do things over here.
Is there a positive lens that we could use out of this, which is, you described at the outset that Netflix asks everybody to say, are you a keeper? In other words, if somebody handed in their resignation, would you fight to try to keep them on board? Is the positive side of that that you could do the same exercise and say, well, if somebody is a keeper, I should do those things now unbidden. I should look at ways to improve their situation, to make their work life better, to find ways to bonus them, to performance reward them because they deserve it.
Absolutely. And to be fair to Netflix, when I read through this document, what they're saying is that they pay top of market salary for their people. Now, they don't have operations in Ireland, but they do have lots of different operations around Europe, in Paris and London and Madrid, etc. And they say that they're paying people top of market plus the cost of replacing that person. So with that premium comes this expectation of really high performance. And they see the employer-employee relationship not necessarily as a very enduring and long-term thing, but as high performance while you're there. And when you can no longer meet high performance, good luck and thanks.
A lot of texts, one saying, Anton, most employees are average performers. A company full of superstars is fantasy. The odds are that if you dump an average performer, you'll replace them with another one.
That's probably true. I think people go through phases of high performance to average performance. But actually, do you know what? You need a company of people who have complementary skills, different personalities, different attributes. And if we were all the same, it would be very boring.
But being cynical, is that not also a facet of the Netflix test? That you may look at somebody and say, well, no, I don't think they're a keeper. But you are somewhat constrained by the market, because the bet isn't are they or are they not a keeper. It's is there a better one somewhere else?
Yeah, and I think you've also got to look at the environment that they're in on the West Coast, where you've got these businesses that are scaling, you know, very significantly, and there is a huge amount of really high performing talent that wants to get in and add those brands to their CV. But is it going to be enduring and lasting? You just wonder.
Tech says, I work with a person who should be, and they write it thrice, fired, 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 and this person is untouchable, unfireable. Is that a common problem in Irish companies?
Not so much in the private sector, I would say, where there's decent performance management in place. But you do hear the horror stories from the public sector and the semi-states.
What about union representation and collective bargaining? Because I would have thought if you were sitting in the States and you worked for Netflix and you saw this kind of communication, likewise if you worked for Amazon and you saw their diktats about returning to the office 5 days a week, it might incentivize you to say joining a union might be a good idea.
It certainly would. I think Netflix have managed to avoid that to this point. But if they were in Europe, which they have, I think 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe about 8 or 9 offices in Europe, you'd imagine that's something, a bridge they might have to cross over here.
And we've seen instances before where US companies have fallen afoul. I think Twitter recently had an issue where they fell somewhat afoul of Irish labour laws. Difficult, I would have thought, to run a multinational and make these kind of sweeping statements.
There's always the subtext, isn't it? So subject to local labour laws. But do you know what? There always seems to be a way when these strategies come down from the overlords in international locations. There always seems to be a way to transpose them into Irish law or to get around the process.
We had a text in relation, I think this comes off the back of what you mentioned about Amazon requiring people back 5 days a week. What does your guest think about the 4-day work week? Better or not better for everyone? What do you think? And what's your prediction? Is it here to stay, or is Amazon the start of a trend?
The 4-day work week, I think there's a couple of things here. We've seen some companies where they manage to get 5 days productivity in 4 days work. We've seen other organizations where people have just made it a 4-day work week because they work from home on a Friday and their productivity slips. And I think it's too early to call it. The research in the early days, straight after the pandemic, was everything was fantastic. The market was very strong and people were saying, look, we're as productive. That's no longer the case. So I think it's a wait and see.
Donal, thank you very much. That's Donal O'Donoghue, who is Managing Director at Sanderson Recruitment and host of the Talent Matters podcast. Aviva Insurance, as you probably know, is the sponsor of the Pat Kenny Show. And to celebrate that sponsorship, they've given us a fantastic prize to give away every day this week. We have premium level tickets to some of the biggest games in the upcoming Autumn Nations series at Aviva Stadium, along with £250 in spending money. For more info and to learn about Aviva's great home insurance offer, you can see aviva.ie. So what we're giving away is two tickets to Ireland versus the All Blacks and two tickets to Ireland versus Argentina at Aviva Stadium, plus £250 in spending money. And because of the week that's in it, the thing that we need you to do is give us the name of this scary movie.
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. What comes to mind?
Halloween. You know, the one with the guy in the white mask who walks around and stalks babysitters.
So if you know the name of that movie, you can text the word game, then the name of the movie, and then your name to 53106. That's 53106, and it'll cost you 30 cent. The Department of Social Protection is receiving backlash from the Irish Creamery Milk Suppliers Association because Dutch rather than Irish cheddar cheese is being used in state-funded school lunches. Joining me now is the ICMSA's President, David Drennan. David, you're welcome to the show.
Good morning, Anton. It's actually Dennis Brennan, but we won't fall out over that.
My apologies, Dennis.
Dennis, no problem at all.
How disgusted were you to discover that the Dutch had squeezed you out of the school market?
Well, it's not that the squeeze is out, Anton. Like, you know, we've no objection to, look, we're in a free market and we've no objection to Dutch cheese being stocked on Irish supermarket shelves the same as we stock our products on their shelves, and it's up to the consumer then which they want to buy. But we just feel it's a bit hypocritical like that. We're trying to teach our children about food miles and buying food locally and reducing carbon footprint of food and all that in our schools. And then they go down and sit down to their hot lunch, which we're hugely in favour of, and they're presented with cheese that's been flown in from Holland at a school's level. Like, it's a bit hypocritical. Like, so, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't think it's a big ask that the Irish state should ask schools who are participating in school lunches scheme to source locally Irish produced food where possible. You know, I mean, that, I don't think it's a big ask to ask our own children to eat our own food.
Does it not bang you up against some fairly significant EU laws? I mean, one of the things that your members benefit very much from is access to the entire European market, where you can't have that kind of nation-based protectionism. So would we find ourselves getting slapped on the wrist fairly quickly from Brussels if we did it?
I think to ask schools where possible to source Irish food is not, you know, I mean, I think, okay, we have to abide by all laws. We're not asking anybody to break the law or anything, but I think asking a school where possible to source local food, I mean, the children in question came home to their parents here who were dairy farmers and said, you know, Daddy, Mammy, why am I asked to eat Dutch cheese when, you know, we can't eat our own cheese in this country? So I think it's not too far of an ask to ask our government to insist or to actually encourage, not insist even, to encourage where food can be sourced locally and reduce food miles, that, you know, for our school children. As I said, it's a free market when it comes to supermarket and all the rest of the retail sector. But I think for our own children to set example for them and do what we ask them to do, they would do that ourselves.
But who's the ultimate purchaser here? Is it the individual schools or is the Department of Education entering into a broad overarching contract?
It's the individual schools. The funding is provided from the Department of Social Protection, and that's given to the schools, and it's up to the principal or whoever in the school that deals with this to source the school lunches. But we think it's not too much of an ask, you know, to maybe encourage people to source food, locally grown, nutritious, sustainable food. I mean, as I said, we have one of the most sustainable systems of food production in the world here, especially our dairy sector and our beef sector. And I don't think it's too much of an ask. You know, we're comparing outdoor system of farming, grass-based system of dairy production, and obviously cheese production from that, compared to an indoor system in Holland. Like, so I think if we want our children to, you know, we can't try to teach our children how to do a certain thing and then do the opposite ourselves with their own lunches. So I think it's a little bit hypocritical. So we're certainly not calling on anybody to break the law or do anything like that. But surely we can encourage schools to source food locally where at all possible.
Although I suppose there the issue is who the we is, because the ICMSA can obviously come out and make that suggestion, as you are doing now. But the Department of Social Protection, can it provide money to schools and say, we would like you to make sure that this money is spent on Irish produce rather than another EU member state? That'd be high risk for them, wouldn't it?
Well, look, I'd encourage them, I suppose. They don't have to make it mandatory or anything, but they can certainly encourage it. Like, I mean, I think it's not too much ask. Like, if your son or daughter are in school and you're a dairy farmer, it's very hard to understand why you need to fly cheese in from Holland when it's available over the ditch from in your local co-op. It's a very hard ask. And how can that be sustainable and environmentally compatible with reducing food miles?
Well, the setting the sustainability aside for one second, I assume that the motivating factor is cost, is it?
Quite possibly. We honestly don't know, but I still can't see how Dutch cheese can be any cheaper than Irish cheese. I mean, we sell on the world market. We all sell on the world market. But I think there's other opportunity costs here as well, Anton. I mean, our dairy products is famous worldwide for its taste. And I think if we want to encourage our children to get into a space where they're having nutritionally balanced, environmentally sustainable food that tastes good, like our dairy products are famous worldwide, and that's why we such export markets all over the world. So we want to make this an environmental decision, a taste decision, a nutrition decision. But also, I don't think it's too much to ask us. It's not too much to ask our schools to use local food where possible and practice what we preach to our children ourselves.
You talk about our dairy output being famous worldwide. I mean, obviously our butter has been a hugely successful export product and milk byproducts have been very successful. Have we had much in the way of success with cheese as an export? Is it one of our bigger products?
Oh, it's massive. It's a 1.6 billion. We've about 250,000 tons of cheese exported in 2022. They're the latest figures that we have. So it's a hugely important, a hugely successful sector. Like Kerry, we also have Kerrygold cheese. Like everybody recognises the Kerrygold butter, but we have a huge sector that is Kerrygold cheese also in Germany and in America.
And is that our biggest export markets? I assume it is EU for, well, probably UK is a big export market for us, is it?
Absolutely. An awful lot of the co-ops in Ireland would produce a huge amount. Like the Dubliner cheese and Pilgrim's Choice is hugely popular all over Europe, especially in the UK in particular.
I wonder.
So it's very hard to explain to people why we have the likes of Board B and our new of travelling the world promoting our cheese and how environmentally friendly it is, how sustainable it is, how nutritious it is, how tasty it is, and yet we want to feed our children with a cheese that's imported from another country.
Yeah, I wonder how the EU in the years to come will balance that issue of local sourcing of food for sustainability reasons against common market access and common competition, because it'll undoubtedly become a bigger and bigger issue. Tech saying, our government departments need to be supporting Irish farmers when it comes to procurement. Irish pork has the lowest carbon footprint in Europe, yet the amount of pork imported by government departments is unbelievable. And again, I assume, Dennis, that's back to the same thing. The open market, it comes with swings and roundabouts. It gives us export access, but it also gives us import competition.
Absolutely. We're certainly not against that when it comes to the supermarket shelves or adults making decisions. But I think when it comes to what we feed to our children, like, it's very hard to have a curriculum that includes, a part of it being about sustainable food and locally produced food and reducing air miles and reducing our carbon emissions, and then import cheese from another country to feed to our children when it's freely available outside the gate of the school almost, or over the ditch.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.